A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Okay, just know I absolutely love supernatural stuff, which is partly why I like night hiking. But after this experience, I'll stick to just reading stuff on the internet. So the original plan was we would go out in a group of 4 people or so, but they all ended up canceling. I am a stubborn person and still am, so I stupidly decided to go alone. I know classic horror movie shit. So I got on the road and drove to the area I was planning on hiking, but it ended up being closed. So I decided to again go to a different one I've never been on. I know I'm a total idiot, y'all don't need to say it. So continuing that, I started the hike listening to the one and only Panic at the Disco Dancing's Not a Crime. When I heard someone, it sounded like one of the friends that was supposed to come, so I again idiotically thought they decided last minute to come. I could hear it calling my name and telling me to slow down. Once it started getting closer, I turned off my music and listened closer. If it was coming towards me, it should sound clearer, which sent a chill down my spine. It honestly sounded distorted, like a record player with someone's finger on it. I started getting real uncomfortable when I noticed it was coming from the way I was heading, not the way I came from. From what I remembered, there were no other cars. I started walking back to my car, which soon turned into a run. It continued to get louder, and the moment I saw my car, I booked it. I jumped in, and again, me being the idiot I am, I decided to wait for it come out into the parking lot. I waited maybe 10-20 seconds when I saw this tall-ass black figure. I'm really bad with scaling, but it was probably maybe 7 feet 8 feet tall, which is not humanly possible like hell now, bitch. I turned that car on and speed of. Got a speeding ticket later on, but like better than getting eaten by a 7-foot tall bitch-ass weirdo. I honestly don't know if it was people messing with me or some sort of demon. If y'all know WTF... I nearly died from last year pandemic. For reference, I was at the time a relatively healthy 37-year-old male. My recovery is still ongoing. I was on both a ventilator and ECMO treatment, and my oxygen saturation during my near death was anywhere from 60 to 80. 85 plus was rare and a good day. I know how bad that is. I'm an EMT. This terrible low-oxygen hell lasted 35 days. During those 35 days, I had dangerously unsafe levels of medicine in my blood, opiates and antivirals, remdesivir, etc. During this, my amazing fiancé, now wife, married that amazing human being as soon as I could stand for a bit on oxygen, did a lot of things to try to reach me, even though she wasn't allowed to visit in person. She recorded herself reading Terry Pratchett, had them play my favorite CD, recorded a voicemail from my father, had them put up a poster of Saber from the Fate franchise, hung tons of photos and crafts from the arm of the dome light over my hospital bed, among other things. The part that really FS me up is that the whole time I was unconscious, I was in a pseudo-reality where I could feel, move, think, and react. It looked not unlike a scene out of Sin City, where everything was a washed-out monochrome, except for highlights of red and, rarely, purple-green. The place I found myself was a terrible ruined dystopia, and I mean that in every sense. Buildings were ruined, without water, sewage backed up, trash on the streets and heaping, fetid, rancid piles. The worst part was that I wasn't alone. I was chased by. Well, I still don't know what to call them, to be honest. I've had a little over 7 months to think about it, and I'm really not any closer to categorizing them. I recognize these things as former humans, beings that had become grotesque, warped flesh, teeming with cancerous polyps and growths, their veins showing in a disgusting bulging black red through their skin, visibly pulsing. Their eyes were feral and sharp, usually with black sclera and red iris pupils, but sometimes a solid black. I don't know well, because the moment I saw them I knew I had to run. The problem was that they were faster, stronger, and more cunning than I, and far outnumbered me. They caught me and devoured me, rending me apart. My consciousness slowly dissolved as I died under their jaws, claws, and teeth. And then I'd wake up again, sometimes fully formed, sometimes half mangled still, in another alley next to the trash and filth. And I would stumble, running again. This happened for a month, constantly hunted, to be recaptured and devoured. Often, I had, quote, forced intercourse, if you know what I mean by the creatures, too. I still struggle with what it means. I'm a resilient person, full of gratitude and gladness that I survived, but I never would have if not for my wife. I remember the last run very well, because I was ready to give up. I'd been formed with part of my innards trailing behind me, blown out through my kidney-low back, and I could feel it flopping on the pavement as I ran. I was running up steps, too, which is where they usually caught me, and I was using a filthy railing to propel myself up. I can still taste the metallic, stale air when I crossed to the top, and the way my heart dropped when I saw two huge creatures like the others. Not for the first time, but they were much closer. They were more golem than creature, though, and were fighting one another, four arms and each with massive bone blades on their forearms. I remember that to get by them, I had to duck under one, and the wind alone nearly knocked me over. I found a set of two doors leading to a cellar, and rather than risk pissing them off, I went down into that dank cellar instead. The story is already long, but it feels good to write it out at last, at least in part. So I'm going to finish it. It was one of those cellars that had the brick glass, where there's no way out and limited light gets in. I was naked, and my feet moved through a strange viscous fluid, which feel very furry and vile on top, but slick and congealed beneath. It soon dawned on me that it was decomposed remains, and as light slowly adjusted, I could see human bones in the muck as well. Along the wall were benches, but very crudely constructed, almost primitive, and on them were containers, sometimes junky 5-gallon buckets, slick with filth, other times metal bins, a few garbage cans, all neatly sorting various parts of human beings. And then I heard the footsteps, heavy, steady, final. A giant, bipedal creature descended, more intelligent than the others that went on all fours but didn't speak. He had the sort of no-neck shoulders from massive muscle-bound strength, and he had to contort himself to fit into the cellar. Getting past him was out of the question, because even crouched over, he filled floor to ceiling. He had a Neanderthal-like jaw and bugged eyes that were bright and sinister at the same time, and I could feel the sick perversion and murderous intent rolling off of him. It gives me anxiety and chills to even think about it. "You've been tenderized enough. I figure it's about time to eat you. And you won't come back this time, don't worry. And I swear, by all that I can, to the gods, on my dead mother's grave, it was right then that I really was about to give up. I'd thought a lot about giving up prior to this, to just stop fighting and let myself die. I know without a shadow of a doubt if I had, I wouldn't be here writing this. But I heard a voice, odd but familiar, in my head. Fight. I grew up trained by my father as a boxer, and nearly went professional at one time, when I was younger and wilder. So I fought. I know what you're probably thinking. That's not what happened. I fought, all right, and I did myself proud. I used my range, my speed and power, my combinations. I used things I'd learned from wrestlers, from BJJ, from Muay Thai, from Aikido. And let me tell you that all of it, as satisfying as hearing the little pops of sound and avoiding him for so long was, it amounted to F all. Eventually, I got tired, and I finally made a mistake, swaying into a duck too soon after a hook, trying in vain to move a creature that only let out a faint grunt of annoyance when I'd hit him. He grabbed me, his huge hand clutching me around my upper torso, and squeezed, and my ribs crackled like shattered toothpicks. I would have screamed, but I couldn't. I couldn't breathe. I could only vent foaming blood from my mouth every time he squeezed me in glee. He clamped his teeth into my left arm, taking a huge bite out of it, and it seared like he had molten iron in his mouth. It was and is the worst pain I've even been in. I heard it again in my head. Fight, I did. Pathetically, I hit him in the throat, but he wasn't paying attention to me anymore. He was staring off, distantly, like he was trying to hear something very far away. It gave me enough time to wring his thumb, opening up his hand enough so that he dropped me, and he didn't move, so I went by him, dragging my ruined arm through the muck, bounding up those stairs like a skittering prey animal. I ran. I ran through wildly racing streets, coughing blood out my lungs. Ran and ran and ran as shadow hands and fleshy fingers pulled along my body, trying to drag me down and consume me one last time. I ran into a ruined Chinatown, the styling of the buildings and awnings eastern, and ran into one of those outdoor markets, the sort with a pergola set up to keep things in shade during specific hours. It was the only clean structure I'd come across. The concrete floor was cool, dry, and tidy, and hanging from the board above me was a little wire and bead tree, nestled in a glass bottle, dangling in front of my face. I don't know how, but I knew then I was safe. I never saw another monster. I explored the ruined city, slowly moving upward, and came across actual people again, though none talked to me. The city was beset with civil riots and police forces in SWAT gear and armored vehicles containing them. I was up across a skyway, walking towards a pretty sunset, when my vision just dissolved. Like a movie crossfade, I was simply awake and staring at a familiar little wire and bead tree, nestled in a glass bottle, dangling in front of my face, hanging from the adjustable arm of the dome light in front of me, along with more pictures of people who loved me than I can name. From the little end table at bedside, my father's voice was speaking to me. Later, when I was more aware, I would rewind it and hear his message. "I'm not telling you to rest, my son. Right now, you fight. You gather up everything inside of yourself, because if you rest, you will die. You gather it all up, and you fight. I still think about this a lot, and about what it means. Every damn day." When I was 14, I'm 20 now, I saw a shadow person. I was scrolling on my iPod, looked at the door that was right in front of my bed, and there was a tall shadow figure of a man staring at me. I froze instantly. I said a prayer in my mind because I couldn't speak, and it walked away. It turned to the side, then two long strides, then disappeared into the darkness of my room. I cried and screamed for the next 2 hours. My mom thinks it's someone who astral projected in our house to spy on us. In 2014, I saw a cup lift itself into the air, then back down on the table. In 2016, three glowing white orb things were floating in circles on top of our house. My entire family saw it, but they convinced themselves it's just an illusion from lights far away. But they were bright and floating in random circles for 3-ish hours. Never happened after that again, 2019. Another shadow person, but witnessed by my two brothers. In the closet this time, a lot of random door handles magically being pushed down and doors being swung open through the years 2 and 2020. I left my haunted, cool, childhood home, but at the new house. My entire family and I heard my brother's voice scream, "Help me," in the hallway, and he was sitting in the living room. Probably the creepiest experience. My spiritual mom says it's just fairies playing tricks on us. That was the last of my encounters. My mom was a missionary with the tribes in southern Alaska, and I grew up with stories of weird events. I'm in Northern California, about 10 minutes from the Oregon border along the coast in the heart of the Redwoods. 6 years ago, my son and I were out deer hunting. We had taken an old logging road that went off the main logging road. It went off about 2 miles. At the end was regrowth and a couple more roads and trails that took off downhill. I had my 7-year-old son pick a road to take. We headed down for a half mile when we came to a small creek. We continued down another half mile or so to a plateau where we sat and listened and glassed the area. After about 15 or so minutes, we began to hear rocks slapping together. My son looked at me and asked, "What's that, Dad?" I had no idea. I've been hunching for 20 plus years and never heard anything like that. I told him to get up and head back to the truck. The rock slapping lasted 5 or so minutes. We made our way back slowly, still trying to hunt, but also listening to any other out of the normal sounds. We're about halfway back to the creek, and we heard something coming right at us, running through the brush and trees. I raised my rifle to almost shoulder level. Then a deer popped out, running at my son and me. It went around past us not no more than 10 feet. As I stood there, the first thought was it should be scared of us, but it ran right at us. My next thought was whatever it was running from was bigger than us. My son was on edge, and I said, "Let's head back." The part I'll never forget is when we hit the small creek we had stopped earlier, there was a sapling about 5 inches in diameter that was snapped over and blocking the way. As soon as my son saw that, he looked at me with utter fear in his eyes and began to run the whole way back to the truck. As he was running to the truck, I was trying to calm him down and try to get my mind in control. The rock slapping begins again. We reached the truck, jumped in, and left. He was in tears and said that he never wanted to go back to that spot. Every year we go hunting, he brings up that event. I still consider myself lucky to still have him go hunting with me after that event. I know if it were me at that age, I would never want to go in the woods again. Not my story, but my senior's. Two of them were sending one of my friends that has fallen sick. We all are in the same club, and we're having a camp from a park back to the bunk late at night. Before the camp begins, all of the seniors wore wristbands that were taken from a temple to protect them from any danger, because we never knew what would happen. As they were walking back, they were lost. However, out of nowhere, a black dog appeared and started walking in front of them, like it was a sign asking them to follow. They followed, and they did actually went back to the bunk safely. When they looked for the dog after that, the dog disappeared. They even mentioned that the dog was pure black, just like a shadow. When my senior looked at his wrist, the wristband was gone. Creepy, if you ask me. I am from Waterville, Maine. Back in the late summer, or early fall of 1971, I was newly married and living in Killeen, Texas with my husband who was in the Army. We had a small duplex apartment in Killeen. One night he had duty and I was home alone in bed around 3 a.m. in the morning. I woke up suddenly and saw a black figure standing at the bottom of my bed. It was 8 or 9 feet tall and had huge big black wings and red eyes. I closed my eyes and opened them again, and it had moved closer to me on the right side of my bed. I couldn't scream. It was as if I was frozen in fear. I covered my head in the blankets. I was so afraid. About 5 minutes later, I looked, and it was gone. It gave me a horrible feeling, and I prayed never to see it again. Shortly after this event, I came back to Maine as I was way too frightened to ever stay alone at night when he had duty. I told my mom I had seen a huge black angel that night, and she was glad I came home as that didn't sound good. I had never heard of the Mothman, but a few years later I came across an article and a drawing of one. Even before I read the article I said, "Wow, that is exactly what I saw in Texas." It didn't have a noticeable neck and its face was like hooded. Its wings tucked in on its side, but you could tell they were very large. It was totally black except for the eyes were round, large, and red. Lon, I still think of this thing with fear. Personally, do you have any idea what it is? I'm in my 70s now and I am still searching for an answer. When I was around 8 years old, my family was in Pensacola, Florida visiting. We always went to parks. And along the beach, there was a federal park that also once had been used by either the Coast Guard or Navy for spotting U-boats in World War II. Periodically, as we were driving through the park, we saw these bunkers in the sand dunes. Some of them had large, you could drive a truck in them, sealed off entrances. We eventually ran across one where the entrance was not sealed off, and we stopped to explore. As you stood at the entrance, you could hear other voices and sounds so clearly. There was some tunnel connectivity between all of them. My older sister and I walked down the pitch-black tunnel to explore it while my parents finished getting my younger, i.e. baby's, siblings out. We stopped oddly, and then my sister turned to go back. This was the first strange thing why we stopped exactly where we did. You see, my sister walked back, but I decided to go forward deeper, and literally my next step, I fell down a big vertical shaft. Strange, too, was that I suddenly caught on something because the shaft went much deeper. I could hear voices way deeper coming from down the shaft. There was no bottom under me, nor was there anything sticking out, but I was caught. My sister yelled, and my dad ran down the tunnel to the shaft where it was now apparent a thin piece of sheet metal had been placed over it that I had collapsed. He could not see me, but I could see him. He was literally freaking out calling for me when I called back. He laid flat and tried to reach down to get me. I reached up and could not reach him. He told my mom to hold his legs as he leaned deeper into the shaft, but still no bueno. He told me to try to stand higher and reach him. I told him there was nothing under me but air. I reached as hard up as I could and my dad reached as far down, but it was like over a foot or more between our hands. Really strange thing, #3. As we did so, I felt something envelop me. very strangely around my body, but very carefully and comfortably, and it just pushed me up. It pushed me up to where I could grab my father's hand. Now many of you may question the last, but that is the best way to describe what I experienced. The further that I could not have stood anyway because my leg was broken, more on that in a sec. And furthermore, as they were putting me in the car, I heard my dad nearly break out in tears, telling my mom that he thought I was going to be lost, because as best he could tell, there was nothing holding me and his hand was too far away for him to have reached me. He told her he had no idea how I reached his hand. Strange for. Later at the ER, when the doctor went to examine my leg, he pulled off my jeans to discover a perfectly round, about 3/4 circular stab wound into my leg. At first, the doctor thought the broken bone must have created it, because there was no hole in my pants. No scratches up my leg, like something had gone up my pants leg and poked me. Later, the doctor was completely perplexed, because the bone was totally stable, and at the first X-ray reading, it was only a hairline fracture they missed, so it could not have poked through my leg. Needless to say, all of it freaked everyone out. I still have the puncture wound scar, one of the few my body has kept, as I heal very well and rarely scar. Later, the park ranger told my parents that those vertical shafts on average are well over 50 plus feet deep, some closer to 100, and were ventilation. They were smooth-walled with no ladders or anything. He did not know how I would have not fallen to the bottom. Me and my cousin were out hunting near Johnson City, Tennessee, and were sitting on the side of the wall of a rather large hollow, which consisted of very thick underbrush and lots of evergreen. A larger valley then leads first to a clearing and then on to a supposed old Indian graveyard. All of a sudden, we heard the brush in the hollow below rattling and could tell that whatever was making the sounds was rather large. I was armed with a Ruger 10/22 rifle with approximately 150 rounds of ammo ready to go. Under my night vision scope, I could see what appeared to be a man, but upon further inspection, I realized that the man was a creature about 7-8 feet tall, approximately 450 pounds. It was covered with thick black fur and was slimmer than the popular Bigfoot image, almost skinny with a neck. Also protruding on either side of its head were long tapered horns, also black in color. On the top of the head also protruded a horn pointing straight up. All horns were approximately 5-6 inches in length and were the same dark color as the creature. I was terrified. I emptied a 25 round clip into the creature, and then we retreated into a nearby cabin about 60
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
5 feet away. The next morning, we could not find anything except for lots of spent shell casings and bullet holes on a walnut tree. I thought I had struck the creature several times. Nearby animal traps had been sprung and all the bait extracted. On a nearby ridge, we located a series of tunnels made up of brush and various sizes of tree limbs, vines, and leaves. We thought it could have been the lair of the beast. Well, we weren't going to stick around and find out. We quickly returned home and never went into that area again. I don't know what we encountered that day, but I don't believe that it was of this earth. About 3 years ago, my girlfriend at the time, my best friend and his girlfriend, and my girlfriend's best friend and her boyfriend all decided to go camping at a state park. I had been there a couple of times before and had no encounters, not even heard anything. At the time, I had had about 5 encounters with a dogman on 5 different occasions, so I was aware of these creatures and knew what they could do. Yet, I was still stupid enough to go camping. We were staying there for 3 nights. The first night was actually really nice. I was super nervous because I thought I was going to see one, but I saw nothing that night. We stayed up until about 1:30 or 2 in the morning, laughing, drinking, and just enjoying each other's company, and then we went to bed. The next day, we went on a hike, and I saw some footprints that were a little odd, but nothing out of the ordinary, and some claw marks on trees. I figured that was probably a bear. That night, my girlfriend woke me up and told me she had to go to the restroom and asked if I would go with her. The bathhouse was about a 2 or 3 minute walk away from our campsite, and it was in the middle of the night. She wasn't comfortable going alone, so we went to the bathhouse. That's when things started. On the way back, I noticed how quiet the woods were, and I knew that feeling. So, I told my girlfriend to go ahead of me and wake the others. We were going to have to go. I wasn't comfortable staying here anymore, and the entire time, I couldn't shake the feeling I was being watched. The first part of the encounter didn't happen for another 20 minutes. While we were packing up, I heard some branches breaking about 10 feet from camp. I never saw anything, but I could hear it sniffing around, grunting and growling just outside of the light from the fire that we had lit. I told my friends that this is why I wanted to go. So, we hurried up and finished packing, getting everything in the car, and we took off down the mountain. As we were nearing the entrance to the park, one of these creatures sprinted out from the underbrush beside the road and hit the side of my truck. Naturally, I slammed on the brakes and reached for my rifle, hoping to fire a warning shot and scare it off. I didn't see it anymore, so I got out of the car to check the damage. I knew it was stupid, and I knew it was dumb when I did it. It wasn't there waiting to pounce on me and kill me. There was only a slight dent in the car, so we got back in and began to drive again. That's when the third one hit us from the other side of the car. Another one of them came and rammed into us. At this point, the other dogman that was chasing us came out from the woods and hit us on the other side of the car. So now, we had one on both sides. I put the car in park so I didn't get in a wreck. These creatures kept slamming into the side of the car for about 2 or 3 minutes. They broke my back window and reached in and tried to grab my girlfriend, but they didn't get her. For whatever reason, after about 3 or 4 minutes, they just left. The reason this one is so scary to me is that this is the closest one has ever gotten to me, and the closest one has ever gotten to hurting me or any of my friends. My girlfriend never believed me about these creatures until that night. I know it sounds crazy, but that's my story, and I'll stick to it. Me and my friends used to go camp and hike out in northern Arizona. It was usually a big group of 10-12 of us, and one of our favorite things to do was play tag after dark. The first day we got there, it was already getting dark out, so we would have to wait until tomorrow to do some hiking. We quickly set up camp and once dark decided to play hide and seek. We would pair off in couples to be safe while the two hunters used walkie-talkies to communicate and find us. I preferred staying close to camp hidden, 'cause 9 times out of 10 the hunters will take off for the woods first thing. Me and my partner were well hidden on top of a hill surrounded by some rocks and dead trees. The hill was perfect because it gave a perfect view of the campground and no one could sneak up on us. Well, while we were waiting, we saw someone return to camp. Instantly, we knew this wasn't one of our friends. The figure was closer to 7 foot tall, but looked skin and bone frail. The man either had a twitch or was on drugs because he kept shaking his head violently. He had something shiny and metal in his hand. It wasn't until he passed a lantern we hung up early. I saw he was carrying a hatchet. At that point, we were both freaked out. We still had cell service, so I got on our group chat and quickly posted, "Someone is at our camp. Return ASAP. This is not a game." Knowing they would be coming shortly, me and my friend decided to charge at the guy from our hiding place, hoping to scare him into leaving. The moment we stepped out of hiding, the man turned towards our direction, as if he knew we were there the whole time. We ran at the guy, but he didn't budge or even move. We stopped about 20 feet away, waiting for some kind of a reaction from him, but there wasn't one. He stood there with his face blank, watching and studying us right back. My friend yelled at the man, asking him what was he doing, what did he want, and so on. The man started to smile randomly as my friend continued yelling at him. There was something chilling about the way he smiled at us, like he was posing for a picture, showing the biggest grin humanly possible. Suddenly, 5 of our friends came charging for the camp right at the guy. All of us played sports or were in some kind of lifting, so we were all in good shape. But like before, it was like the man knew they were there, and the moment they gave chase, he took off. He was faster than any of us, which shouldn't have been possible just by looking at his physical shape. We lost him almost immediately. Just like that, it was over, and we returned to camp. By the time we got back, the rest of the group had made it. We told them about what happened and debated if we should leave or stay. Seeing there was 12 of us, we figured we would take turns keeping watch. It was just one guy, so what could he possibly do all of us? We started to unwind and hang out smoking by the fire until we decided to pass out. We woke up from our friend Ajay yelling outside the tents. It was still dark out, and he was keeping watch, but something had freaked him out. He said he kept hearing something big moving around the camp just out of his line of sight. We went over to where he heard the noise, but found nothing. Once we were sure it was safe, we went back to our tents. Just as we all started to get back, and the same man from before leaped out of one of our tents. We stood there in shock and terror for a moment too long, because before any of us could react, the man was running away again. This time he was laughing as he ran. Just his laugh alone sounded hysterical and not deranged. After that, we quickly packed all our gear and got the hell out of there. The incident made sure we never returned to the same area for camping. We would still go hiking around there, but as far as camping went, we wouldn't dare. Not again. Not my story, but my senior's. 2 of them were sending one of my friends that has fallen sick. We all are in the same club, and we're having a camp from a park back to the bunk late at night. Before the camp begins, all of the seniors wore wristbands that were taken from a temple to protect them from any danger, because we never knew what would happen. As they were walking back, they were lost. However, out of nowhere, a black dog appeared and started walking in front of them, like it was a sign asking them to follow. They followed, and they did actually went back to the bunk safely. When they looked for the dog after that, the dog disappeared. They even mentioned that the dog was pure black, just like a shadow. When my senior looked at his wrist, the wristband was gone. Creepy, if you ask me. I was out on a routine job patrolling a remote area of the park when I saw it. The small but unmistakable opening of a cave. Since it wasn't on any of the maps, and it was my job to check things like that out, I wasted no time in taking out my flashlight and heading towards the smaller, but manageable cave opening that was wide enough for me to step through without having to crouch down. The cave was situated in a clearing close to a pond. The opening was located right in the middle of a wall of sandstone and was fairly unremarkable looking. No sign that it was dangerous or out of the ordinary. Since the opening was barely wide enough for several people to step through, that meant the cave had never been turned into a mine. There was also no garbage lying around or any other traces of recent human activity. So for all I knew, I was the first human being to set foot in this cave in who knows how long. The feeling came with a sense of exhilaration I'd never felt before. So I took a deep breath, switched on my extra strength flashlight, and steadily started walking inside. My first few steps in the cave were beyond cautious. Aside from the fact I'd never been here before, the terrain was very steep. You could feel it slowly descending further into the earth. Since I didn't want to lose my footing and go tumbling down, I kept casting the flashlight beam around, because despite the intense glaring light it provided, the darkness in the cave was unlike anything I had ever seen before. I'd been in the forest at night many times, but this far exceeded that. This darkness was dense. After enough careful steps, the descent became smoother, and the floor leveled out. The cave floor itself was rough in some spots and smooth in others. You could tell where the elements had weathered away parts of the land and made a smoother path to walk. The temperature had also dropped significantly down here, and I could now see the many impressive stalactites and stalagmites dotting the cave. The rough descent had been replaced by a fairly even path straightforward, but there wasn't a ton of space to walk around here. A small group of people could squeeze through, but no more than that. My boots occasionally crunched on gravel, but apart from that, the cave floor was empty, almost uncannily clean. Seeing how untouched the cave was, it can't help but make you feel like an insignificant speck in the vast scheme of the universe. The cave was not only far older than I was, it would be here long after I was gone, especially because the cave seemed endless. The more I explored, the more I got the sense that I was making no progress at all. A look at my watch told me I'd been down there for about an hour when the narrow path opened into a massive chamber, and the sight made me gasp. The entire space was filled with water, and the walkway served as a makeshift bridge to the other side. The walls were rough-hewn and jagged virtually everywhere you looked. There had been plenty of impressive stalactites in the cave, but the ones dangling from the ceiling here were massive. So precise and sharp-looking it seemed impossible that they had occurred naturally. Some of them were practically touching the water that filled the space. I had no idea how deep the water was, but in the thick darkness, it looked unnervingly deep. The walkway that went from one side of the cavern to the other got rougher here, but it still looked as steady and weathered as before. So, being more careful of where I stepped than ever, I slowly began to cross the cavern. I was almost halfway across when I heard the sound of a rock hit a cavern wall and splash into the water. The sound in the empty space seemed so uncannily loud I almost jumped. Once I was sure of my footing, I carefully shined the flashlight around to check. There was nothing. No signs that anything at all had happened. But on this job, you learn that just because everything looks fine doesn't mean nothing is going on. The hair standing up on the back of my neck told me everything I needed to know. I didn't dare take another step forward. If anything, I was slowly adjusting my footing to turn back around. I was just about to go back the way I came when I heard it. The sound of whispered voices. At first, I had no idea what it was. I hadn't heard a single sound before now aside from my own footsteps. Ignoring the chill slowly washing over me, I slowly began to walk back across the cavern. I'm not sure if it was just my imagination, but as I did, the whispering got louder. The creepiest part was how the voice seemed faintly familiar. Not enough so I recognized it, but enough that it was unsettling. The worst part was that I had absolutely no idea where the voice was coming from. The acoustics of the cave made it seem like the voice was both everywhere and nowhere at the same time. I was almost completely across the cavern when I cast my flashlight around and saw it. There, on the left side of the cavern in the middle of the dark water, was a shadow. With my heart pounding in my chest and the grip on my flashlight slick from sweat, I carefully turned and aimed the beam directly at it. The water illuminated was a murky gray, but the shape was as dark as it had been without the flashlight. I had no idea what the shape was. It was completely solid, but it wasn't any sort of animal, and it didn't look remotely human. It just hung there, floating just below the surface. If there had been the slightest suggestion of human activity here, I'd say it was garbage, a blanket, or some clothing that fell in the water. But I knew that wasn't the case. The sight made my stomach clench. But then, with my flashlight still aimed right at it, it disappeared. There was no movement or any disturbance in the water. It just vanished. That was my cue to leave. Once I was safely across the cavern and on solid ground, I ran out of there as fast as I could do to the numerous rock formations I had to maneuver around. It seemed to take an eternity. I periodically checked behind me to make sure there was nothing there, and while there never was, I could never shake the feeling that something was watching me. After what seemed like a painfully long time, I finally arrived back at the cave opening. Then came the difficult task of maneuvering what was essentially an uphill climb. By now I was drenched in sweat and the climb did nothing to help that. But taking care with where and when I stepped, I eventually was standing at the mouth of the cave with daylight coming through. I gratefully walked out into the sunshine and looked down into the cave. As I did, I swear I saw a figure walk past on the cave floor below. But when I looked back, it was gone. Once I caught my breath, I radioed the cave discovery into the station, and some other rangers came out to check it out. One of them was my boss, Jack. I told them I didn't see anything, but one look at me and my demeanor told them something was up. Jack was no stranger to the unusual things park rangers can and do encounter on the job. So with him and the other two rangers listening, I told them what I saw and experienced down in the cave. When I was done, Jack sat there quietly for a moment. Doesn't matter if it's 2022 or 2822, things still go bump in the night, he said in his deep, steady voice. I don't disagree, I muttered. I'm sure you don't, Wade. I won't pretend I saw what you saw, but I believe you saw what you saw. Nature can be, and often is, a very scary place. No kidding, one of the other rangers agreed. There's a reason this cave looks so untouched by people. No sign of animals either. None. Jack shook his head at that. That's the sign something is off. Animals don't go near something. That means people shouldn't either. So we'll mark this cave as dangerous, go back to base, and log the find. Now let's get out of here. I was checking on the animals when the weather radio blared out the tornado warning. I wasn't too surprised there was a large storm over the area southeast Oklahoma, and there was already an advisory in effect. I closed up the barn door and hurried towards the house, meeting with my kids and my husband. Halfway there are tornado shelters and an old dugout house on the side of a hill from when my family first moved to the area. Tornadoes don't occur often in our area. We got ourselves into the shelter and we barred the metal door. The dugout has had a few upgrades over the past century, but the metal door was there from the beginning. My great-grandparents lived in the dugout for 5 years until they met the Homestead Act requirements. My great-grandpa didn't mind the dugout, but my great-great-grandma was a whole different story. My husband keeps the dugout prepared for anything. His dad was a kid living in Woodward, Oklahoma, when the Woodward tornado came through. His family survived the destruction, but they became preachers of preparedness after that. He made sure that the dugout was stocked with a week's worth of canned food, water, a radio, flashlights, and batteries. We never had to use more than the radio and the flashlight in all these years of occasional tornado warnings, until this particular tornado, that is. About 5 minutes after we settled into the dugout, the wind started picking up outside. We could hear thunder and rain outside the doors. We started hearing the impacts of large hail hitting the metal dugout door. The sound of the wind changed to a roar, similar to a plane about to take off. We could hear the different sounds of objects hitting the door, but then we heard a loud crack and a lot of scraping on the door. In total, the entire event lasted maybe 7 minutes, but we didn't try to leave the dugout until the wind died down. My husband unbarred the door and tried opening it, but it would only open about an inch. We could see through the crack that the apple tree next to the dugout had blown over in front of the door. We tried to pry the door open every which way, slamming our bodies against the door, but nothing worked. We were stuck in the shelter. We knew at some point there would be people checking on places in the tornado's path, so we stuck a piece of wood in the crack of the door to hold it open and got comfortable, prepared to wait. My husband never thought about latrine logistics for if you were trapped in a shelter. When 7 p.m. rolled around, we discovered that claustrophobia and panic attacks can strike anyone no matter how prepared you are. We were safe and were prepared physically for a week, but I'm not sure our minds could have lasted a week. We could see it was dark through the crack of the door when a foul odor wafted in. It smelled like a wet dog combined with a male goat and a teenager's armpits. I thought it was an overly pungent skunk and I went to shut the door, but I stopped when I heard what sounded like footsteps. We started yelling for help, calling out to whoever was out there, but nobody responded. There was a shuffling sound and the smell got even stronger. My eyes were watering as I yelled out and pounded on the door. I heard a grunt before the sound of footsteps and the odor started fading away. The kids asked why the person didn't help us. I didn't know, but I told them that maybe they were going for extra help. It didn't explain why the person didn't at least talk to us. The footsteps returned. We yelled and pounded on the door and again no response. The footsteps and odor faded away again. This time I felt uneasy and I barred the door shut. Two times this person came and ignored our calls for help. Something wasn't right with this person. The kids and my husband fell asleep, and I kept an ear out for rescuers for a few hours. Around 3 a.m, my daughter woke up from a nightmare and started crying. I was comforting her when I heard branches cracking and scraping against the door along with grunting. I woke my husband up and we pounded on the door and yelled. We could smell that odor again, so we left the door bar just in case. When the noises outside stopped, we waited about 10 minutes to try to open the door. This time, the door opened enough for us to step out. The trunk of the tree was still laying near the door, but there was a pile of branches off to the side. There were a lot of footprints, but they were bigger than any foot I had ever seen. We woke our son up, and we all left the dugout and headed towards the house. It was still dark, but we could see that for the most part. The tornado didn't do much damage. We checked the house. I headed out to the barn to see if the animals were okay. I was about halfway there when I heard one of our hogs screaming. I ran towards the barn and stopped a few yards away. I could see my market-ready Hampshire barrow struggling and screaming while slung over the shoulder of a dark, hulking, human-like figure. I yelled at the figure to drop my pig, and it just turned and looked at me. I shined my flashlight at the creature's face. It had a grayish face with a flat-looking nose. It had thin, dark brown hair all over its body and massive feet. After a few seconds, it turned and walked into our cornfield towards the creek and disappeared from my view. I've seen Finding Bigfoot, so I know what I was looking at. I know it was a Bigfoot. I talked to my mom, and she said she had seen the wild people when she was a kid. My great-great-grandpa had installed the metal door on the dugout after hearing stories of wild people in the area, but the only trouble they seemed to cause was stealing livestock like what I had seen. We've had animals seemingly disappear in thin air over the years, and it makes sense now. By that point, I didn't mind the loss of the pig. The wild people had rescued my family from the dugout.